Hi, and thanks for joining me on a resistradio.com podcast. The date is August the 8th, and I'm joined today by Alex, who's been doing some work with the International Middle East Media Center, which is actually based in Palestine. And he's basically got loads of interesting things to tell us about his experiences there. So, Alex, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Britt. Thanks for having me on.
So, the last time I saw you was in sort of rural Netherlands.
And yeah, it was.
The next thing I heard, you were actually in Palestine. So can you tell us how you actually ended up in Palestine?
Yeah, sure. Sure. A friend of mine is active in certain peace organizations, Peace Now, which is an Israeli organization. And he got the chance to work as a journalist for the International Middle Eastern Media Center, which is situated in Bethlehem in Palestine. And I had a month free from my study, and he had the chance to go there, so he invited me along, and I was like, yeah, great.
Okay, so is this something you actually had an interest in beforehand, or?
It is something I had an interest beforehand. Yeah, I've always been interested in the situation. From my research from the 9/11 and other incidents, often it somewhere down the line of the research you get back to that area. You know, it's always something to do with Israel or America or Palestine. So, yeah, I've always been quite interested in it, yeah. But I never actually thought you could go there, or I didn't really think it was safe to go there. But, yeah, you can go there, and it is safe to go there, so.
Okay, so what were you expecting? And then how did reality meet up to your expectations?
I had expected, it was pretty much what I expected. When I first arrived in Jerusalem, I got the bus out to Bethlehem. Now you've got to go through checkpoint 3000 there. And I reached the checkpoint, and it was really early in the morning, about 6:30. And it was just full of, Palestinians. I thought it was a refugee camp. And then you get there and it's bang, it's real. You know, everything you've read about in the news, everything you've seen on the TV suddenly hits you. And you have to get into Bethlehem, you've got to go through a checkpoint, and then you see the wall, that great big massive wall that runs for miles, making West Bank the biggest prison on the planet. And then you see it, and it's, oh God, it's real.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the media center that you're actually working for. What do they do? And
The Middle Eastern Media Center, and you can check their website out on imemc.org. It's a small Palestinian media organization. They rely on volunteers, and they just report the news from the Palestinian point of view.
So it's completely independent.
It's completely independent. It's completely dependent on foreign help. They do get a subsidy from the local council there, only a little bit. But you can look on the website, and we just report stories from the West Bank, what's happening there, and just post it on the site.
Okay.
So you can check that out at imemc.org. If you're interested in getting involved, it's no problem. Send a message. Everybody there is very helpful. They'd love to hear from you, and you can get involved with that organization.
Okay, so it's very important that we have these kinds of independent, non-biased media organizations, because in the West, you know, we do have this one-sided, pretty much, coverage of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. And I think that Israel are often presented as the victims and the Palestinians as the aggressors. But when you get there and you enter the West Bank, you see that that is absolutely not the case. It's totally the other way around.
Okay.
Now, I did speak to a lot of people there, and I asked, what's the best thing I can do? What's the best thing people can do here in the West? And they said to me, the best thing you can do, document your time here, take photographs, write about it, and spread the information as much as possible. Basically, just tell the truth.
Okay, so maybe we can get into some of these facts. Maybe you can tell us, first of all, in a sort of general sense, how you found the sort of Palestinian people and the Palestinian culture.
Fantastic. It is absolutely unbelievable, Britt. These people have very, very little. They live in fear every day. but it's honestly the friendliest and safest place I've ever been to in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, you walk down the street and it's, hello, welcome, hello. And it's not because they want your money. It's not because they want something from you. They're actually genuinely happy that you're there.
Yeah.
I stayed for about a month with a Palestinian family, and they were also fantastic. They just treated me like a son. And what's very important there, I actually did an interview with a school there, and I talked to the headmistress. What's very, very important in Palestine is social connections. It's really, really important that they build a good social network, that they, that the communities and the neighborhoods, they work with each other. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very different atmosphere to in the West, which, of course, is getting very much individualized. Mm-hmm. Many people don't know their neighbors, or often you're too busy to have spend time with your family or eat together. But these things are extremely important for the Palestinian people. In fact, the woman I spoke to said if they didn't have this tight community where people care about each other, the Palestinian people wouldn't have survived so long.
Yeah.
So there is a very, very big feeling of community, of helping each other, to the point where crime, petty street crime, is just unheard of.
Mm-hmm. So the people manage to stay happy and positive even in the face of kind of...
It's unbelievable. Yeah, they do. I just don't know how they do it.
Okay.
Because after 3 weeks of being there and living under the occupation, I started to hate people. I started to hate Israel. And I'm thinking, why are they doing this? Mm-hmm. But the Palestinian people were just... I don't know. It was just, we just want peace. We just want you to tell everybody in the West, we're not a line of terrorists. We're not queuing up to suicide bomb people. Mm-hmm. We just want peace. We want basic human rights, and we want to live together. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they do it, man.
Okay.
I think it's really something that we can learn. I mean, in Holland here, we've got everything. We've got water, electricity. We don't have to live in fear. But most people walk around complaining about dog poo or, you know, very small things. And these people have got nothing, and they're just so positive.
Okay.
I don't know how they do it. I honestly don't.
So maybe you can tell us about some of the things that they have to face on a daily basis.
Sure. One good example is, actually, when you go to Bethlehem, there is also it's Christian and Muslims there. The life's quite difficult, but you don't really see the effects of the occupation there, apart from the great big settlement on the hill, which is very, very imposing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, as your listeners know, settlements are a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. The International Court of Justice says they're illegal, and no foreign governments support Israel settlements, but they're still there and they're still growing. Yeah. Now, you see that in Bethlehem. Now, we went out to for a trip to Hebron, and that was just mind-blowing. So we got off the bus in Hebron, and it's crazy. The people are a little bit crazy. The Palestinian people, I mean, are a bit crazy, but in a positive way. You walk down the street and it's, hello, hello, welcome. Welcome to Hebron. Hello, welcome. Everybody's really, really friendly.
Yeah.
And we walked around and it was a bit mad. I mean, there's horses and carts walking around. There's rubbish on the floor, but, you know, it's not a nice place, but the people are very friendly and there's a good atmosphere there. Mm-hmm. So we walked further through the city towards the old town, the market section, and then it got a bit scary. Now, it's difficult to explain, but if you can imagine that there is a great big settlement that's been built in Hebron, and it totally divides the city, like it literally runs through people's gardens. Yeah. Now you it's sort of built on a hill. All settlements are built on a hill for strategic advantage. So we walk through the Palestinian market, and they have to construct metal barriers. They have to put protection over the top of the market, because from the settlement on the hill behind it, they throw all the rubbish over.
Right.
They're just throwing everything. Disused bombs. There's rubber bullets on the floor. Everything has to be protected. There's protection barriers everywhere because they're just bombarded with rubbish from the settlements. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this was quite difficult to see. And as you walk further into the old town, you notice that a lot of the shops have been closed up. Now, the Israelis have said that obviously the Palestinians are living illegally there, and it's their land, and they've closed basically most of the shops there. And what I noticed at this point was similarities between what the settlers and the Israelis are doing and what the Nazis did to them, which was quite strange, because they've closed up a lot of Palestinian shops and they've drawn stars, you know, the Star of David on it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? There was some similarities. And then I began to think, well, could this be a sort of psychological... Yeah, I think that what happened to the Jews for the Holocaust has had such a massive impact on the national psyche that it could be that the person who was abused is now becoming the abuser. But I did see a couple of parallels between what the Nazis did to the Jews and what the Jews are doing now.
Okay, that's quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you find
now, that...
Did you find that Israelis? Did you find that Israelis often sort of refer to the Holocaust and kind of use this as a card against you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, when I went to Jerusalem, you go into a bookshop and it's Holocaust. Holocaust books, Holocaust this, Holocaust that, Holocaust the other. Of course, it's a terrible thing to happen, but then I started to wonder, is this some sort of psychological reaction against what's happened to the Jews in the past?
Okay. Did you actually get to interact with any of these settlers? And if so, how did you find them?
Not really. I'm just going to come to that bit. And we walked through, as I told you, all the shops were boarded up. Now, people were coming up to us and saying, please help us. We're really in a bad situation. And then you get to the Israeli checkpoint and the border of the settlement, and it literally cuts through people's houses with Israeli soldiers with great big guns walking around. We came in contact with, and I can't remember the name of the organization now, but they're an independent non-government NGO organization, and they're observers there. So they're actually there just to document what's happening. So we got into a conversation with them, and they told us about their work, and they said that you should go and visit the settlement here. And they gave us directions. So we walked through more of the town, and then we were met by a Palestinian family. Now, and we went into the house, and the back garden is literally full of rubbish from the settlement that they've thrown over. There's barbed wire everywhere, and it literally cuts through the whole garden, separating the land from the people. We also went into his back garden, and there was exploded bombs there, rubber bullets from the settlements just lying on the floor with kids playing, Palestinian kids playing with them. Then we went up to the roof. And from the roof, you can see the view of Hebron, and there's an Israeli checkpoint right next to his roof with a big, scary Israeli man with a gun. Mm-hmm. And he showed us that they have water tanks on the roof there, and the Israeli soldiers have put bullet holes in them. And he showed us that. I've got photos of it here. And they had to sort of put concrete in the holes where they've attacked the water supply. Mm-hmm. So it was really sad to see. And what makes it worse is they're just so friendly people, and they're just getting absolutely screwed over. Anyway, so we went through the checkpoint into the settlement area, and they call this area Ghost Town because it was previously Palestinian owned, but the Israelis have taken it and closed all the shops. So we went through the checkpoint. Obviously, it's no problem for me because I'm white. I've got blonde hair and blue eyes, so it's no problem to walk through.
Yeah.
No, really. Like... And then you went into the sort of settlement area, and I have never felt anything like it. I can only describe it as if maybe you've seen a film of the Wild West and like a sort of ghost town, you know, and the gunslinger walks through the ghost town and there's tumbleweed in the background and you're waiting for something to happen. It was that kind of feeling. Yeah. Very, very, very strange. Like no one on the streets in the settlement, absolutely no one, apart from... soldiers walking around. Mm-hmm. Within 2 minutes, it's just like, I've got to get out of here. It's horrible.
Okay.
So we walked further down the street, more and more Palestinian shops being closed with the Star of David on. Then we got to a Muslim graveyard. Mm-hmm. Now, the Israelis have taken this, and they won't let the Palestinians visit their own, their own family in the graveyard, which is very sad to see. Very, very, very strange feeling as you walk around. It's like something's really not right. Then we went round the corner, and there's a barrier in the road, and on the left-hand side, the Palestinians can walk, and on the right-hand side, it's for the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah, it's pure segregation. I mean, it really is.
So did you actually get to meet many Israelis then, and what were their opinions of the Palestinians?
Yeah, well, after about 3 weeks, I was getting bombarded by all this occupation, and as I said, that you're starting to hate, and at that moment I was thinking, look, it's not healthy anymore. I've got to get out. I've got to go to Israel, and I have to get the other side of the story, because you just cannot comprehend it. You cannot comprehend why someone's doing this to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to say that I didn't have much contact with Israeli people. It is possible to go on a tour of the settlements, but I actually didn't do it in the end. But so anyway, I went to Jerusalem, and I did meet some people from two organizations. One of them is called, and these organizations you can look up, and you can like them on Facebook, give them a bit of support. One of them is an Israeli organization called Breaking the Silence. And this is very interesting because it's been started by Israeli veterans who served in the IDF.
Okay.
And what happens is in Israel is that everybody has to do military service from the age of 18 for 3 years. So, and this does have a big impact on these Israeli kids. Like, they have to go and learn how to use guns and stuff. And anyway, this is called Breaking the Silence. You can look them up on Facebook. You can look them up on the internet. And their aim is to raise awareness amongst the public about the reality of everyday life in the occupied territories. So these are ex-soldiers who have thought, hold on, there's something really not right here, and we're going to do something.
Okay.
So look them up. You can read their testimonies. They've written a lot of eyewitness reports about how about what the things they've done in the occupied territories. And another good peace organization that operates from Tel Aviv is called Peace Now. They are, I think they're the biggest Israeli peace organization.
Mm-hmm.
And they support a two-state solution and also don't support the building of the settlements. I also met some couple of university students, Jewish university students. They told me, and I asked them, like, why is Israel doing this? I mean, what is their mindset behind it? And they mentioned two things. The first one was the impact of the Holocaust. And the second one was this belief that they're God's chosen people and it's their land.
Yeah.
So from what I understood from these two students is those are the two main driving factors. Just from the Israeli mentality. But what's absolutely crazy though, Brit, is that you go to the promised land and it's just stones. Like, there's nothing there. Like, it's weird. It's not like it's Tuscany and there's, you know, acres of beautiful green grass and rivers, and it's just a lot of stones and thistles and rocks. And that's it.
Okay.
There's nothing there.
So, but they think they have a right to this place because
everyone does, but this gets back to the Balfour Declaration. The British government promised both sides that area, so everybody's got their own claim to it. Yeah, yeah. Everybody thinks it's their land.
Mm-hmm. But the settlements.
I can understand
just...
it. Sorry.
Sorry, I interrupted you there. Carry on, Alex.
No, I can understand it from the Jewish point of view that I believe everybody should have a safe country. Everybody's got the right to be safe, and obviously after the horrors of the Holocaust, the Jews really need a safe place to live. And I agree with that, but what I really disagree with is this building of the settlements, because they're building outside their internationally recognised boundaries, and that has to stop.
Isn't that the responsibility of Britain and the US to stop that, though? Because, I mean, ultimately they have the power, don't they?
It is. They're not recognised anywhere. Now, from what I understand is that every single time that the international community try to do something about these settlements, America vetoes it.
Okay,
so, and I've done it about 15 times.
So why do you, or rather, why do the people in Palestine think that this might be? Why is there such pro-Israeli sentiment in the US? Is it because the US government is filled with Zionists? Or?
Definitely. Well, that's my opinion. I don't know what the Palestinians think. But certainly, I would definitely agree with that the American government is, I guess that in positions of power, there's a lot of Zionists there, yeah. I would imagine so.
Yeah, and also the British government as well, of course.
Also the British government, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and the Jewish lobby groups, I mean, they're just so huge, like AIPAC and things like that in the US.
Of course, of course. But I would like to say also that there are peace organisations operating from Israel, so not all Jews agree with this. Mm-hmm. The two guys I met from Jerusalem University were also against the building of the settlements.
Okay.
So, what else from Israel? I went to Tel Aviv, and it's just a different world.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a plastic bubble, and from what I understood, I don't think anyone's got any idea what's happening there.
Are the people happy there, or what's life
right,
like there?
That's a good question. When you walk around Tel Aviv, it looks quite nice. It's nice weather, beautiful beach. The people don't look very happy. Okay. They don't look very unhappy. They're just sort of there, and it's a bit of a weird... It's as if that they're trying to be Californian surfers, but they're not.
Right.
It's hard to explain. It's... When I was walking around Tel Aviv, I didn't really feel anything. It wasn't really good. It wasn't really bad. It was just sort of there. Now, what I did notice in Tel Aviv was some of the graffiti, and I saw a couple of times "Don't Think" as written as graffiti, and I also saw it on a few T-shirts. What also I noticed in Tel Aviv is that you can buy these weird drugs, like hallucinogenic drugs, and I don't know what they're called because I don't do that sort of thing. But I noticed there were. Looked like a little bit like an Amsterdam coffee shop,
right?
On the streets, and there was this sort of young hippie-ish type guy. So I asked him what's going on here, and he said that it's I can't remember the name that he used. I've never heard of the drug before, but anyway, it makes you trip out big style for like half an hour. And he was going it. He was giving it. Don't do it, man. Don't do it. It's dangerous. It looks like it's a place that's where people are being diverted from the realities of what's happening. It's just like going to another world.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Now, also, what I noticed in Tel Aviv was massive segregation. When you get off the bus station there, you walk out and it's just full of, like, homeless Sudanese people living in sort of poverty. Mm-hmm. And as you get further and further towards the city centre, it's, more affluent type of area. So yeah. It's a very segregated society.
I read that they're actually sort of rounding up immigrants from Africa and sending them back home. I think that must have been happening when you were there. Did you have any experience of that?
Yeah. Now, there was when I was there, remember that the Israeli government at the moment is a very right wing, quite a racist government. And there was I'd have to check this, but the foreign minister said something along the lines of, yeah, the Sudanese people here, don't they understand that Israel is for the white man?
Right.
Like they did, and I checked it because I couldn't believe that someone would say that, and he did say that. So I don't think that they really want Sudanese people there. But to bring that back to the settlers, I also heard that some of these settlements they're quite empty. Now, when you go to a settlement, there's like no one there. There's no one on the streets. There's no atmosphere. But I did hear from my boss that these places are that they're not fully. They're not fully occupied, they're not absolutely full. And what they've been doing is that they've been getting people, for example, from the Philippines to convert to Judaism. And, you know, every Jew's got the right to live in Israel. And they've been bringing people from bad areas from the Philippines to live in these settlements to make up the numbers. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really think that if you're black, it's the best place to go, Israel.
So that's quite interesting because, I mean, you often get Jewish people sort of crying anti-Semitism and saying that people are racist or whatever. But at the moment, it seems that the Israeli government are one of the most racist governments on the planet, I would say.
Big time. Big time.
So there's a real hypocrisy there.
It's real hypocrisy. But then maybe it comes back to this. I mean, I can't prove this, but it's just my opinion that you see a lot of similarities between what happened to the Jews and what happened to the and what's happening now. In the same way that many people who, for example, abuse children often have been abused themselves. Mm. You know what I mean? So I suspect that there could be some sort of psychological damage in the national psyche that's forcing history to repeat itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting theory. Now, there's a couple more things I'd like to ask you about. In an email to me, you mentioned that you'd been to court because some people were being... tried for stealing water. Maybe you can tell us that
story.
Yeah,
I did. Yeah, no, I did. Now, I was reading about what's happening to the Palestinian children, actually, and I have to point out at this point that Israel's broken every single point on the Geneva Convention. Mm-hmm. So they've been arresting kids in the night. They've been trying them in Israel, which is illegal. They've been denying access for the parents. So I thought, well, I'd quite like to go and see this. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see any children, but we did see the judicial process in action there. Mm-hmm. So we went to this great big horrible prison in just outside Jerusalem. Now, there's massive security checks to get in. I mean, they're checking everything about five times. And then we went in and we had an interpreter. So they brought four of these prisoners in and they're sort of bound by the hands and they've got shackles around the legs. And they come in and, the first guy was up for stealing water. Now, he said, I don't have any money. The Israelis have cut off my water supply. And they do. They steal Palestinian water and sell it back to them five times the amount. Five times the price. And he said, look, I just had to steal water to feed my family. Now the judge said, this is what the translator told me. He said, well, I'm a nice man and a compassionate man and I'd like to help you. I wouldn't like to see you go to prison, so I'm going to charge you 5,000 shekels, which is, I don't know how many euros, I can't remember.
It's a lot of money, though, is it?
Yeah, maybe about 500, 600 euros, something, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, obviously, this guy has to steal water, so he obviously can't pay it. So he said, well, yeah, I can't pay it. I haven't got the money. I said, well, you have to go to prison for a month. And then what happens is that the prosecution appeal immediately, and they just say it's not heavy enough. Mm-hmm. So what happens is they have to have a retrial, so they have to go back to prison for even longer. So even if, for example, he pays the fine and the Israelis appeal, he still has to go to prison.
Okay.
Now that the system is rigged as far as children is concerned, you can get 10 years, up to 10 years, for throwing a stone at an Israeli. Now, what happens is that the Israelis can arrest anyone, even if they think they're going to do something wrong. They just have to think it. So if they arrest children and they charge them for throwing stones, for example, the system's rigged. If the children plead guilty, they have to go back for a retrial and they go to prison for 6 months. If they plead innocent, they go to prison for 5 months.
Okay. So it's completely rigged, yeah.
It is completely rigged, yeah. No, sorry, if they plead innocent, they have to go back for a retrial 6 months later. If they plead guilty, they get 5 months in prison, for example.
Okay.
So it seems that the system's really rigged, yeah.
So,
yeah, quite sad to see, yeah.
When things like this happen and you live with this sort of constant abuse, I mean, surely that does turn people towards wanting to commit violence, I would have thought.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you said in an article, in an interview that you did, was that a lot of the people are trying to find a peaceful solution, a lot of the Palestinian people.
Yeah.
Maybe you can tell us about that.
I can't understand. I mean, when you're living under that condition, I can understand that people are starting to hate and to get angry and to get aggressive. Now, I can't speak for the people in Gaza. I didn't go there because you can't get in there. It could be different there. So I'm just talking about the West Bank. But everyone I met was non-violence is the way, peaceful resistance. And they weren't even saying I hate Israel and I hate Jews. They were just saying we just want to live. We just want to live together. We just want basic human rights. Yeah. We just want a road and a school and we want water. And that's it. Like, I never heard anyone say death to Israel or I hate Jews, something like that. And that, you know, I was thinking these things after 3 weeks, but, you know, and they don't do it in the West Bank. It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
I guess that there must be some people who do think that, but in my experience there, no, it was peaceful and, I don't know how they do it. I honestly don't.
Okay. So do you think that peaceful protest is going to achieve anything?
I think so. I think that as far as a Western person is concerned, and this is what I also wanted to, is to just to give your listeners a few practical tips or two things that you can do for the peace process there. So first of all, you've got to understand that you can only do a little bit. There's only so much one person you can do. Only so much one person can do. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend is to check out the first thing to do is go and visit Palestine. Do it. It is absolutely fantastic. It is amazing experience.
How would people
do that? It's safe.
Can you just book a flight there? Or
you just get a flight.
Yeah. What's the
airport? You just get a flight and go there. Well, I got a flight from Amsterdam to Tel Aviv, okay, and then got a bus.
Okay.
That's it. You just book a flight and go there. It's not that complicated. And so the first thing you can do is go and visit Palestine. It's absolutely fantastic. And then you'll be supporting their economy. Everybody there's really, really happy that you've come to visit. They're very friendly, very, very welcoming. As I said, street climbs virtually unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing you can do, go and visit. When you're there, you can contact peace organisations, for example, Breaking the Silence, Peace Now. In Bethlehem, there's an alternative media centre, and what they do is they give alternative information. They arrange projects, for example, going and building a water tank, something like that, in Palestinian villages. And every Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday, they give lectures, which is really interesting. I went there a couple of times, and they'll give deeper information about the situation there.
Okay.
So you've got Breaking the Silence, Alternative Media Centre, and Peace Now. But I would recommend just go there, go and see the situation for yourself, talk to the people, live the life, live under the occupation, and it's absolutely amazing. That's the best thing you can do. While you're there, take photos, document everything, visit websites, post your writings on the internet, do radio interviews, and to try and get as much information out as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, I did ask many Palestinian people, what's the best thing we can do? And they said, go back to your country and tell people the truth.
Now, are the people hostile towards people from the US or Britain? I mean, apparently not, no. but why not?
No.
Because if I was a Palestinian, I would be quite angry.
Really. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. In fact, a lot of Palestinians emigrate to America.
Yeah.
Now, I did have a couple of people saying, oh, I'm British, and like, Balfour, from the Balfour Declaration.
Yeah.
But that was it. Mm-hmm. And then you just go, well, sorry, and he's like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, no, I just don't understand it, no. Because I thought, when you look at that wall, and it's absolutely massive, it costs about €2,500 for one concrete slab, €2,500 for one concrete slab there. And these are things that are funded by America or by the EU, but no, they don't. They're just really happy that you're there.
Okay. So what do you think the future is for the Palestinians? Because in my opinion, I mean, I don't think anything is going to change in terms of foreign policy.
No.
Certainly not for the better. And
no.
All of these wars that are being fought in the Middle East are directly linked to the protection of Israel.
Yeah.
In Syria, in Iraq and Afghanistan. So how can this possibly be turned back when the British and the US administrations are so full of Zionists and there's such a strong Jewish lobby in those countries? How can we push this back?
Well, the first thing we could do is, as I said, go and visit Palestine, go and tell the truth. Now, if I tell American British people and European people, maybe they can start to put pressure on their MP or whatever to stop funding the atrocities that are happening there. But it's so you can make people aware of it, the American public or the British public. Now, as far as the peace talks are going, what's happening at the moment is that it's a stalemate. Like, it's not going really bad. It's not going really well. It's stuck at the moment because the Israelis are saying we're not going into talks with Palestine until they accept that we're building settlements. And the Palestinians are saying we're not going into talks with the Israelis until they stop building settlements. Now, this is a very, very difficult situation, which brings me on to the subject of price tag violence.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the destruction, the stopping building settlements is key to the peace process. Now, what's happening in the situation there is that you've got these settlements. As I said, they're illegal under international law. They're a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention, but no one really does anything. And what's happening as well is that the settlers are now building what's called an outpost. And these outposts are directly linked to violence in the area and political instability. Now, an outpost is it's sort of an extension to a settlement. There's no government decision to establish it, there's no legal planning status, and it's not attached to a settlement. and it's about 100 metres away from it. And they often just consist of caravans or a few mobile homes or something. Now, again, this is sort of illegal under every law in the world, but the settlers just say it's natural growth, so we need it. Now, what happens is that the Israelis have been putting a bit of pressure onto the settlers to say that you're not allowed to build these outposts and we're going to have to dismantle them. Now, if you so much as touch an outpost, the radical settlers go into a Palestinian village, and what they've been doing now is been striking the villages right at the heart. So they've been setting fire to mosques. Now, this is quite scary because in the past, the violence often occurred sort of on the outskirts of a village. But now, if you touch an outpost, the radical Jews will go and burn a mosque in the heart of a Palestinian community. Now, the reason they're doing this is a clear message from the settlers to the Israeli government that the Palestinians have got nothing to do with this. The settlers are saying, if you touch our settlements or our outposts, we will destabilize the region and cause another infitada. Mm-hmm. That is the situation. So okay. It's absolutely, I mean, how you break through that, I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean? It's,
I mean, to be honest, you do hear things, and it does seem that Israeli society is kind of internally divided as well.
Yeah. There's big divisions, yeah.
I mean, I was reading about these more fundamentalist Jews who refuse to serve in the IDF. Is that something you heard about when you were there?
Yeah. They refuse to serve in the. I'm not sure if they legally have to, but I think that they, as I remember, if I remember correctly, they are trying to introduce it so that the Jews have to serve, the Hasidic Jews have to serve in the IDF. It's right what you said, Britt. There's deep divisions within Jewish society. You've got your sort of Californian or surf dude from Tel Aviv to radical fundamental Hasidic Jews in the settlements. What I suspect could happen. Now, these Jews, as I mentioned about the outposts, these settlers were radicalized during the second Infitada, when Israel had to demolish, in exchange for peace with Hamas, they had to demolish or dismantle a few settlements. Now, during this time, they became very, very radicalized. What possibly could happen is that the divisions in Jewish society go so deep between the radical settlers and normal Jews and normal Israelis, and they could turn on each other, maybe.
Okay.
Possible. Mm-hmm. Don't know.
Now, how much of what's happening at the moment is the responsibility of just the current Israeli government, or is this something that's going to continue? And, you know,
As I said, there's a stalemate, and it's going to continue. But I think that the government in Israel, the Netanyahu government, is an extremely right wing government. How it looks for the future, I don't know. I suspect that that Egypt will annex the Gaza Strip. I suspect that.
Okay.
Because of the Muslim Brotherhood there, and it's geographically quite near to Egypt. I would suspect that that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, a solution for the problem, it's just so mind-blowing. It's so fucked up. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's all over rocks and, I don't know.
And what about
It's a complex issue. It's a complex thing there. Sorry?
And what about the situation regarding Iran? I mean, this is obviously incredibly dangerous at the moment. And Israel are obviously, talking about military strikes on Iran. Is this discussed much in Israeli society? And
I'm not sure.
You didn't speak to anyone about that?
Not really, no. I was very, very focused on the situation between Israel and Palestine.
Okay.
So I'm not really sure on that. I can't comment.
Well, is there anything else that we haven't covered, Alex, that you would like to...
I would like to mention one positive thing that's happened there. I visited a place called Susia, and you can look this up on the internet. And Susia is a very old Palestinian village, and it's been like razed 5 times. And I visited them. I did an interview with them, and these people are living in constant fear. Now, just near to Susia, there's also a place called, and you'll have to excuse my pronunciation, but it's in the South Hebron Hills, called Mutaquara. I'm sorry if I've pronounced that incorrectly, but anyway,
Don't have to apologise to me. I don't know how it's pronounced.
And this is a community of many cave dwellers there. Like, they've got absolutely nothing. Now, the Israelis have said, you're living illegally on this land. We have to clear your villages. You have to move off because we want this land for military purposes, for military training, which is just absolutely, absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, a positive thing is today is that the EU, 15 senior EU diplomats have been to that area, and they are condemning what's happening there. So if you make people aware, if you go there and you get involved, that people will listen, I think, and that's a very positive development today.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to be returning then anytime soon?
I don't know. What I would actually like to do if I go back is not go to Palestine, but I think that you can have more impact if you work for an Israeli organization. I think people are going to listen to you more. For example, Breaking the Silence or Peace Now. So if I did go back, I'd probably do that. But you actually don't really need to be there. As you mentioned earlier, it's to do with changing the attitudes of the British public and the American public that I think that a Western person can be most useful.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be good to go back, yeah.
I mean, there's the obvious danger that these Israeli groups are infiltrated by, you know, Israeli intelligence as well, of course.
Possibly. Possibly.
You hear about the Shin Bet and all the things they get up to. But
It could well be, but I mean, yeah. There's only so much one person can do, so.
Yeah. Okay, Alex. Well, what I'll do is I'll put all of the links that you've mentioned during this podcast below the audio there, and we'll try and get this out to as many people as possible.
That's great, and I'd like to just encourage your listeners go to Palestine. It's safe, it's easy to get there, and you'll have a fantastic time and learn a lot.
Okay, Alex, that's great. Thanks a lot. It's been a very interesting discussion, and I'm sure
thanks very much for your time.
Learned a lot today. Cheers,
Alex. Thanks very much. Bye.